바스르바 야
옴 나모 바가바티
바스르바야
Nisamya.
After hearing.
That.
Vakte.
The speaker.
Idrikshaya.
Just to find out who spoke.
Ishaha.
All sides.
Vilokya.
Seeing.
Tata.
There.
Anya.
Any other.
Apasyamana.
Not to be found.
Swadishnyam.
On his lotus seat.
Astaya.
Sit down.
Vimrishya.
Thinking.
Ta.
It.
Hitam.
Welfare.
Tapasi,
in penance.
Upadista,
as he was instructed.
Eva,
in pursuance of.
Adadi,
gave.
Manaha,
attention.
Translation.
When he heard the sound, he tried to find the speaker, searching on all sides. But when he was unable to find anyone besides himself, he thought it wise to sit down on his lotus seat firmly and give his attention to the execution of penance, and he was instructed. As he was instructed,
Purport. To achieve success in life, one should follow the example of Lord Brahma, the first living creature in the beginning of creation. After being initiated by the Supreme Lord to execute tapasya, he was fixed in his determination to do it. And although he could not find anyone besides himself, he could rightly understand that the sound was transmitted by the Lord himself. Brahma was the only living being at that time, because there was no other creation, and none could be found there except himself. In the beginning of the first canto, in the first chapter, first verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it has already been mentioned that Brahma was initiated by the Lord from within. The Lord is within every living entity as the Supersoul, and he initiated Brahma because Brahma was willing to receive the initiation. The Lord can similarly initiate everyone who is inclined to have it. As already stated, Brahma is the original spiritual master for the universe. And since he was initiated by the Lord himself, the message of Srimad Bhagavatam is coming down by the cyclic succession. And in order to receive the real message of Srimad Bhagavatam, one should approach the current link or spiritual master in the chain of the cyclic succession. After being initiated by the proper spiritual master in that chain of succession, one should engage himself in the discharge of tapasya, in the execution of devotional service. One should not, however, think himself on the level of Brahma to be initiated directly by the Lord from inside. Because in the present age, no one can be accepted to be as pure as Brahma. The post of Brahma to officiate in the creation of the universe is offered to the most pure living being. And unless one is so qualified, one cannot expect to be treated like Brahmaji directly. But one can have the same facility through unalloyed devotees of the Lord, through scriptural instructions as revealed in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam especially. And also through the bona fide spiritual master available to the sincere soul. The Lord himself is a spiritual master to a person who is sincere in heart about serving the Lord. Therefore, the bona fide spiritual master who happens to meet the sincere devotee should be accepted as the most confidential and beloved representative of the Lord. If a person is posted under the guidance of such a bona fide spiritual master, it may be accepted without any doubt that the desiring person has achieved the grace of Om Ajnana Timrandasya Yenunana Salakya Chakchurun Militam Yena Tasmai Si Guruve Namah Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Snapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Swaparantikam Mandeham Siguro Siyutapatakamalam Sigurum Vaisnavamska Sri Rupam Sagarjatam Sahaganaravadanditam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sivisakam Vidamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesa Gopi Kakantarada Kantanamostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Visabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Dhrubhyacha Sakripas Nubhyacha Paditanam Pavanevyo Vaishnadevyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adaita Gadadhara Sri Vasudevi Gaura Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 So Lord Brahma was trying to seek out the source of his existence. And he tried in various ways in this quest. And just as he became totally bewildered, he had tried to go down the stem of the lotus, and yet he had not found out the origin of his existence. So just as he was bewildered as to what to do next. At that time, he heard tapa. And in case he might have imagined, or might have thought that he imagined the sound, he heard it twice, tapa. So it was, he heard it definitely. And so he tried to search out the speaker, but he was unable to find the speaker. So then he thought about the matter and he realized that that he was getting instructions from a superior and he could understand that that superior was the Supreme Lord, as Srila Prabhupada is stating. So thus Lord Brahma decided that it was wise to surrender to that instruction. Srila Prabhupada is pointing out that Lord Brahma received transcendental instruction from the Supreme Lord and then decided to accept that instruction and completely dedicate himself to that instruction. So this counted as the initiation of Lord Brahma. So we see that the essence of initiation is commitment. The more external sides of an entire ritual of is also all significant. The exchange of vows, the changing of the name, the fire sacrifice that follows, all have a essential function because within the vows that are taken, one makes that commitment. In the name of that is being changed, one is accepting the new identity within the new commitment that has been made. And in the sacrifice, so many blessings are coming upon this commitment. All the blessings of previous acharyas, of the Supreme Lord, of and so on, are being invoked. The demigods are present there. Their blessings are invoked. The Vaishnavas. In this way, many, many blessings are being invoked upon the commitment that is being made. So all these things are essential because each of these things are very much required for maintaining the commitment. But the essence of the whole thing is the commitment to follow the directions. So Lord Brahma was committed to the Supreme Lord. He took that instruction with full dedication. Without hesitation, he dedicated himself to that instruction. So this is the requirement. Many of us are taking initiations, different initiations, but it is difficult to make that commitment. Again and again, we are making commitment, and again, we are realizing that we cannot live up to the commitment, or that the commitment had a deeper significance than we initially thought. Just as when we first make this commitment in initiation to fully dedicate our life, basically, to the process of devotional service, to follow the process of sadhana bhakti, and then to gradually, as one is becoming purified in this process, increase the quality of our surrender. But each time as time is going along, we find that we fail in so many ways in fulfilling this vow, in fulfilling this commitment of initiation, or that we thought it was a simple thing of just, okay, I'm vowing something quantitatively, 16 rounds and 4 regulated principles. But gradually one begins to understand that that is only the very basis, and that much more difficult is to fill it in. Right? More difficult than to simply commit to 4 regulated principles and 16 rounds is to fill in the vows and to make them meaningful, to actually fulfill the purpose of the vows, pure devotional service, unalloyed surrender, complete, unalloyed commitment. Everything in relation to the spiritual master, who is taken to be the direct representative of Krishna, is then to be taken as of great significance. A word, a gesture, just a mood is to be taken with complete seriousness. If the spiritual master simply raises an eyebrow, then that is enough for the disciple to understand that, oh, this is not desired, and then to, for a lifetime, never again look in that direction. I mean, that is really the level, that is what the commitment is all about. So it's not a casual thing. There is no argument, right, with the spiritual master. And not only is there no argument, there is even no internal sense of difference between the pure devotee disciple and the pure devotee spiritual master. Of course, we are not pure devotee disciples, and in that sense, we are not really doing a very good job as disciples. There's constant a gap between us and the spiritual master, in difference in mood, in difference of what we think is important. We may have personal opinions and whatnot. But truly, the purpose of the scriptures is very clear about the guru-disciple relationship. I know that when we bring it down to practical life in ISKCON, that one may think, well, but, and that's all fine, but could I please make a comment here? That part, I'm leaving it aside for a moment. Maybe later in the lecture we'll bring it down to the more social level. But first, let's look at the at the relationship from the absolute perspective, from the perspective of the scriptures. And let us just once again reconfirm what the real purpose is of the relationship. And Srila Prabhupada, of course, is one who said about himself that how is it that this miracle happened to me? My spiritual master had many, many very qualified disciples. So why is it that this miracle happened to me? The miracle referring to all the success in preaching. And Prabhupada said, I can think of only one thing, that I 100% follow the order of my spiritual master. So, at least in Srila Prabhupada, we see that scriptural requirement fulfilled. He actually fulfilled the vow to the fullest extent. Which is there for us, clearly, as an indication that it can be done and must be done, and that we are not doing. And now what? Oh, this is the case. So how can we improve? It is, of course, one of the functions of the Vyasa Puja offering. The Vyasa Puja offering is certainly to glorify the spiritual master, certainly to pray for blessings to the spiritual master. And the Vyasa Puja offering is also meant to kind of review to what extent we are really committed to our spiritual master. And to realize our shortcomings in this regards, and then to renew that commitment. So we have this system of annually renewing our commitment. Of course, as we are renewing the commitment, we are doing it half-hearted, and then even that half-hearted promise to renew, we actually already know we're not going to make it, we're not going to live up to it. So what to do? This is called lip service. In the 19th chapter of the Madhya Lila, it is the teachings to Srila Rupa Goswami are described, and then it describes that there are 8,400,000 species of life, and out of these species, so many are in the animal forms, in the plant forms, and then 400,000 are in the human forms. And of those 400,000 in the human forms, there are those that are civilized and uncivilized, and the civilized ones are following the Vedic scriptures, and then amongst those there are also different degrees, and some are worshipping the Supreme Lord, and out of those who are worshipping the Supreme Lord, most are just rendering lip service, it is said there. Yeah. So this term lip service is coming up in the teachings to Rupa Goswami. And I guess looking in the mirror, that's what it is. That's what our commitment is, a commitment of, at least to some extent, lip service. What to do? Some are already accepting defeat, even before trying. Some people say, well, this is just too difficult. I can't do it. And accepting defeat before trying. Yeah. But I guess, you know, when I give lectures every day, I can't help myself. I kind of help to repeat myself a little bit. So in the last few days, we also touched upon the theme how spiritual life is not, or spiritual progress is not reasonable. One cannot just be reasonable and calculate. That logically speaking, reasonably speaking, my capacity goes to this extent, and then we see our own limits. And then if the goal is beyond my capacity, then logically, reasonably speaking, I cannot reach it. Therefore, logically, reasonably speaking, it makes no sense to even try. But that is not, that is overlooking one factor, the Krishna factor. Because Krishna is also present in the whole thing, and Krishna is actually adding to our own endeavors. And because Krishna is adding to our own endeavors, suddenly it becomes possible. Just recently, before I came here in Amsterdam, there was a verse in Bhagavatam which gave many qualities, 30 qualities that a devotee should try to obtain. And one of the topics that came up was charity, and that one should be charitable. And we discussed then Vaishnav charity. And Vaishnav charity as being more than just giving some of our possessions. But that Vaishnav charity means one must give himself. Yes, one must fully give himself. That is Vaishnav charity. And in Vaishnav charity, there is no question of calculating. Well, logically I can give so much. No, one should just give and trust that Krishna somehow or other will do the needful. This is the principle. So also in surrender, in spiritual life, this is the principle. That we must trust that Krishna will somehow or other make the necessary arrangements, even if I am now giving up some of my material security, I need not worry. Krishna will, he will somehow or other be there, and he will take care. He will take care. So I need not fear. That is Bhagavad Gita. Sarva dharmam parichayamami kam saranam braja aham tam sarva pavdevyo moksha vishyami masuchaha. The last word, masuchaha, means do not fear, Krishna says. Beginning, just surrender unto me. Abandon all varieties of activities, just surrender unto me. I will deliver you from the reactions of all sinful activities. Do not fear. Do not fear. We fear like anything. There's no doubt about it. We fear a lot. We do, if we get honest. Therefore, Krishna needs to say it. Do not fear. Because he knows very well. So it's not that we may act as if we don't fear. We do. Surrender is the most scary thing. It is the most scary thing. Giving up one's own arrangements and starting to rely upon different solutions is very, very scary. Accepting a spiritual master, and he can just any time step into our life and say, no, please edit this. This part out. We scrap this. But it's just like a writer who has written his essay and is attached to every word because he placed every word on a gold scale and measured it carefully, thought about 100 times and said, no, this is the word. And then the editor, the insensitive editor, who does not consider at all how much heart you put into choosing that word, just comes in and scraps it in a moment. And it's like totally overlooking, you know, how much of your life went in there. The insensitive butcher has just entered into your text. Right? And of course, you argue with him. And he's like a rock. Right? Everything you say just always gets an answer back. But, you know, I know. I live with editors. And I guess you do too, at least here in the BBT. And editors are people, they always have an answer for everything they say. It is really too much. They have always they've always checked the dictionary, right? And they never casually scrap a word. And that is the disturbing factor. That when they take out the word, they've already looked it up in the dictionary before. And when you then just complain, they say, "Yes, but in the dictionary." The spiritual master equally so. When we start arguing of the scriptures, right? The scriptures, and there we go. One has to come to this point of trust and allows this editing without rebuttal, without rebellion. This is very, very difficult. This is interfering with our spirit for freedom. The horse broke loose and was galloping freely on the prairies, kind of thing, is sort of something relating to our mentality. We wish to be free. We wish that total freedom, just to go in any direction that we feel like going, and surrendering our freedom. Well, you better present good arguments. If you have very, very good arguments, all right, then inch by inch, I'll surrender a little of my freedom. Right? But this is not the right attitude in relation to the spiritual master. And the spiritual master has no time. He has no time to deal with this inch by inch card game. And for each card that we surrender, he has to throw a better number on the table. Right? Maybe he can do, but does he have the time to play such card games with every disciple? It is too much. It is too much if one has to play card games. It won't work. There are too many conditioned souls, too few spiritual masters. It is not possible. Therefore, the disciple that surrenders piecemeal cuts himself in the fingers. That disciple is simply damaging his own spiritual advancement and nothing else. Because one has to do a lot himself in Krishna consciousness. It is not that the spiritual master at the time of initiation says, "And now I solemnly swear that I will carry this disciple on my back back to the spiritual world." Right? And that the spiritual master is like a donkey who is carrying spiritual masters up the mountain, or carrying disciples up the mountain. That is not the case. If we look at Brihad Bhagavatamrita, which is sort of really a very rich book. There we find interesting information about the guru-disciple relationship. Gopakumar, he is sometimes meeting his spiritual master. He appears from time to time. Right? Almost comparable. That was not a good one. Says we will get a fight. The spiritual master of Gopakumar is almost like the spiritual masters in ISKCON, in the sense that he's not there most of the time. It's just as if he's flying in with some plane, and there he is, you know. And then before you know it, he flies out again. It is exactly like that, the spiritual master of Gopakumar. Sometimes he's there. And then he gives an instruction to Gopakumar. But sometimes the spiritual master really doesn't make it very clear at all. He gives this instruction, and Gopakumar is sort of not 100% clear what he really meant, but anyway, it happened really fast, and there was this instruction, and Gopakumar sitting with his instruction, and then the spiritual master is already gone again, before he could really explain it. I mean, these situations appear in the real Bhagavatamrita, which I think is very interesting because there's really a parallel with the modern day jet age Parivrajic acharyas, as Satsarup Maharaj sort of coined the phrase. So very interesting. And then what does Gopal Kumar do with these instructions? Well, he tries to implement these instructions as good as he understood them. Sometimes he gets it wrong, but then that gets corrected later. But anyway, Krishna also, as he's trying to follow that instruction to the best of his ability, Krishna from within begins to help him to understand the instruction better. And in that way, somehow or other, it works. It works without that, with each instruction, there has to be a manual. Right? It's not like that the spiritual master has to write a manual with each instruction, or when he has to give an instruction, he has to give with it 50 quotes from scripture, etc., each with each instruction. No, sometimes it's just simply a raised eyebrow is enough. Okay, understood. And the mood of the disciple is not begrudgingly. All right, okay, I guess we have to put the brakes on now. What to do? And then, well, what a bummer. Anyway, that's spiritual life. Nothing like that. The disciple takes whatever comes from the spiritual master as great mercy and wears it as sirumani, as a jewel on the head, as a great treasure. Practically worships that instruction. So if I can take the instruction and do puja to it, bow down to it, lovingly accept it and say, my spiritual is so kind. He just smashed it. He smashed everything I believed in for the last so many years. He is so merciful. Like that. Something I've been meditating on now for many, many years. He just sort of blew it up as one blows up a balloon with a pin. Right? And for me, it was meaningful and a very deep thing. And he just popped the bubble. I've also have and am also experiencing that in a relationship with the spiritual master, that he acts in that way, that a glance, a look, a remark, and there go things that may have been in my life for over 20 years, in a flash, out the window, goodbye. So it is never cheap. It is not cheap. If one wants this relationship to be successful, remember, this is not broken pieces of glass. We are speaking about diamonds. We are speaking about the greatest treasure. We are speaking about 10% surrender. Us, we. Initiation doesn't just mean, well, I guess I'll join the club. It is not joining the club. It means that one is making the commitment to complete surrender. Complete. And, all right, it is understood that it will take a little time. That is accepted. It is accepted that we cannot do it, even if we try. But we must try. And sometimes the spiritual master will point out that try harder, not good enough. What? After everything I've done, not good enough? Not good enough. Sorry. It is not the not good enough of an ungrateful person. No. It is not to be mistaken for people in this world who always say, oh, not good enough, and it's never good enough. When the spiritual master says not good enough, he simply says not good enough from the perspective of what Krishna gave. Krishna set the standard, and he's simply representing the standard of Krishna. It's a not good enough by the standards of Krishna. It's a not good enough to enter into the spiritual world. It is a not good enough to become a pure devotee of Krishna. In that way, he is acting in a corrective way. So Lord Brahma was, as I mentioned before, an extraordinarily biased personality, a most qualified personality, and therefore he received the post of Lord Brahma. So therefore, within Lord Brahma, there was very little resistance. Due to his great piety, he was able to surrender, as Bhagavad Gita points out, yesam tandikata papan jahanan punyakarmanam te vrunda mohaniya mukta vajanta mandrivivrataha. That one who is very pious, he can worship me with dridhavrataha, with firm determination. So, if we detect in ourselves that we have difficulty to surrender, then we should understand that we are lacking piety, that actually we are contaminated. We should not just hold on to, this is my nature, this is me. No, we should understand I am contaminated, very much actually, more than I thought I was. And this is one of the points that we have to go through in the process of devotional service, is that we become aware of how much contaminated we are. We must be confronted with how much contaminated we are, and then we must accept it, that actually I'm fallen, I'm insignificant. I thought I knew so much, but now I realize I don't know anything, actually. Today, I stand here humbled, and I stand here today corrected, and I stand here today simply to be told what to do next. Try again. Please instruct me again, and this time I'll try and do better. This mentality is required. I mean, it may take many years before we get there. It may take many, many years. It may take 20, 30, 40, 50 years. It may even come at the very end of our life that we finally come to this point where we realize, actually, I am so imbiased, and therefore I've become so covered, and all this time, therefore, I was so falsely proud, but now I realize that I simply need the shelter of your instruction. So this is the stage. One time, Srila Krishnamurti said to Srila Prabhupada, he said, Srila Prabhupada, I am simply a fool. I'm simply a fool. I don't know what to do. Please instruct me. And Prabhupada wrote back, that is very good. He said, that's very good that you're saying that you are a fool, because as long as you consider yourself a fool, I can instruct you. Prabhupada said. So whatever humility in that statement of TKG was real, or whatever was hollow, right, that was left in the middle. Right? But in Prabhupada's reply, he put it right down on the line. Right? It's just like, and yes, as long, this is indeed right. If you're really a fool, if you really understand that you are a fool, then I can instruct you. So, in this way, Lord Brahma was different from us due to his great piety. He didn't have all this contamination of independence. This puffed up concept of the self, that of course we all have. Oh, we are all terribly proud. And most of us are Europeans. Europeans are, of course, amongst the chosen chosen nationalities in the world.
Yeah.
Sweden has like an ancient aristocratic nation.
Yeah.
It's like monarchy. It's like, yeah, for sure, Sweden is with it. Right? And in Scandinavia, everyone knows that Sweden, by far, traditionally, is the most civilized country if you compare it to the neighbors. Right? Everyone knows that. You know? This is the more cultural place. It's in the history books. Right? Oh well, it feels good. It feels comfortable. It fits. Right? Yes, naturally. I'm from Holland, right? Well,
where?
Yes, such a small country. But what influence in the world? You see, people in Holland, very intelligent, of course. It fits. It fits, right? Germany, right? Efficiency. Efficiency personified, yes. Like, never fail. German efficiency never fails. I'm glad about that, I must say. I appreciate it very much. But, of course, only Christian is infallible. That is a fact. So, just see. And then, of course, India.
Vedic culture. Nationalities are falling from the proper spiritual principles. They don't have any sanskaras. That's what can be said. They are mostly natures.
And so on. So everyone has ample reason to be proud, right, of something. We have. And it's deep. It's very, very deep. I mean, what is speak of our swimming diplomas, our driver's license, our, you know, and all the other attributes, you know. Yes, yes. I was in the Boy Scouts and I had 2 stripes, you know. I still remember, you know, okay. So anybody questions, 2, okay. That was pretty up there. In other words, yes, anything that adds to our glory, we have not forgotten. We have not forgotten. Yes. And so, it takes time. It takes time to actually become a disciple. That is not a small thing. With Lord Brahma, it may have happened at the time of initiation, but for most of us, it takes a little longer. That may be the conclusion. We take initiation, good, but then to become a disciple, that becomes quite a challenge. And gradually, we begin to realize what we have done. What have I done? When I
we have no difference from the spiritual master in interest, but still we cannot imitate. Could you comment?
We have no difference in interest, but we cannot imitate. Of course, we have to simply serve him. Whatever is important to him is important to us. But we are we, and he is he. Right? And there is a difference between our spiritual qualification and even in our nature. I saw disciples that started to sport the same sunglasses as the spiritual master, that started to walk in the same way, and so on, and it became cat copies. Right, of Guru Maharaj. Is anukara, imitation. Imitation may be in that we are trying to imitate his level of Krishna consciousness, not only externally in behavior, but that we even try to imitate and of what we think his level of advancement is, and act just as advanced. But one cannot act, be artificially advanced. One must be simply servant, and serve whatever is held in high esteem by our spiritual master. That is what we should do. So, anukara anusar, to follow, to serve. So we just serve whatever our spiritual master thinks is important, that becomes important to us. But not that we remain ourselves. We use everything we have to serve that element. And some of us, and we may be good at something our spiritual master is not good at. Nice. Then we can use that in the service. But for what our spiritual master says is important. And he may be good in something we are not good at. All right. Then we just stay there. Say, I know I'm a hopeless servant, but anyway, I'll try to help, and please accept my service. So we just use our own nature to serve what is pointed out to be important by the spiritual master. Simple as that. It's not complicated. Yeah.
If when the last initiation, we had some part of the spiritual question of spiritual master, but still they need protection for spiritual master and protection of the spiritual master.
Mm-hmm. One should understand the protection is already there. The protection is provided, first of all, Srila Prabhupada provided by creating this ISKCON. It's a huge protection, huge. So the spiritual master helps us furthermore to become properly situated in ISKCON. So the first thing is that the spiritual master says, get properly situated in ISKCON. That sometimes is difficult because some people can only get on with the spiritual master and not with anybody else. That won't work. So we must learn to take shelter of ISKCON and devotees in ISKCON. The spiritual master cannot be the one to, on a day-to-day basis, be there with us with support instructions and an email a day. You know, keeps Maya away, type of approach is really not going to work, you know. It has to be that we become spiritually self-sufficient, that we are able, that we learn ourselves how to be inspired. It's not difficult. If you are serious about the morning program, if you are serious, if we are serious about chanting good rounds, if we are serious about regular reading, then you will feel some spiritual strength. It's really that. Yes. That is the first prerequisite. And if we start neglecting those things, then we start to feel, after a while, we start to feel it. So sometimes we notice that I start to feel a little overburdened, and I actually realize, well, maybe I should put some more energy into my chanting, improve my chanting once again, get more serious about my sadhana. That's the first thing. So everyone has to himself do something about his own spiritual ups and downs. It cannot be, as soon as we feel a little bit going down, that we send off like an email of help. There's sirens yelling, and there it pops up on the screen of Guruji, who has to then sit the whole day behind the computer answering emails, and in this way neglecting his own chanting, his own reading. Therefore, I know I'm not so good at email, but I always, if I somehow run a missed your email, whoever it is, then at least know that I am reading, right? So maybe I should get a sign there. Sorry, reading now, can't answer email. At least I'm reading. That helps. Because if we don't, if you sit the whole day and just read emails, boy, is this the most horrible thing. So we are protected already. We already have it. The spiritual master, yes, he will give us some protection and support, but that's not his main function. His main function is to help us develop a vision. A vision of where we are going with our life. The spiritual master is the visionary. The sannyasi is the head of society, right? of the Vajra Ashram system. He's meant to give the vision. Where are we going? What is my goal? What is my how to progress? He's not, yes, when major difficulties appear, he may be consulted, but he cannot be consulted on a basis of, you know, constant the emergency department, and we just every time we feel a little bit difficult, you call an ambulance. Bring us in. No, we must learn to deal with things ourselves and to take shelter of the devotees also. Because our problems are not so special. Our problems are the same like everybody else's problems. Our problems don't need such a special solution. If the spiritual master is a specialist in compared to a doctor, a specialist, most of our problems can be solved by the general doctor. And there are plenty of those around. The senior devotees are very qualified to give us the support. So we must open up to the senior devotees and take their advice and guidance. And then we do not always need the spiritual master to sort of be there, you know, as the flying doctor. The flying doctor. Work, here he is. Quick. And then the spiritual master, I call it the slow leaking bicycle tire syndrome. Right? It's like when a tire is slowly leaking, you can still pump it up and you can keep on driving. So each time when the air goes out, you just pump it up and then you can still go further. So on your bicycle, you just have a bicycle pump on the back, right? And when the tire goes a little flat, you pump it again and you keep on driving. So in this way, the spiritual master comes in like the flying doctor with his bicycle pump and pumps up the slow leaking tire of our enthusiasm. Quick. Yes, I can go again for a month. Okay, good. Oh, someone in on the other side of the world. Quick. Okay, that one's going. I don't think that that is really what a spiritual master should be doing. I don't think so. I think we ourselves, if we notice that that our tire is slowly leaking, we should put that tire in a bucket of water and see where the bubbles are and stick a piece of rubber on top. We have to find the fault in our own spiritual practices and fix it. And if we can't find it, well, then ask the senior Vaishnavas and they'll tell you, it's there. I can't find anything wrong with this tire. I don't understand what's leaking. They say, well, there's a hole. There's a huge hole. Put a good piece of rubber on top with super glue, and it will never come up again. Just chant that holy name, and everything will be fine. Yes. Yes, I mean, that is always a friction point, because it's the female disciples, they have a handicap, right? That the guru is male, and we have so many restrictions in the interaction between men and women, so it is a problem. there's a fundamental difficulty in the relationship, because one wants intimacy and yet one is by dharma bound to keep distance. So how to deal with that? It's an ongoing friction point. Yeah? Because the fundamental thing is an ongoing friction point. On the one hand, because ladies are already restricted, they cannot just walk into the room and sort of chat, you know, so as may between men, it may sometimes go like that. A little bit of casual association is already getting quite difficult. If there is some personal interaction, it's like in a formally staged darshan, and then there is some male entity as a chaperone, which doesn't sort of help the, you know, the atmosphere for opening the heart and so on. Okay, things can be written in letters, but then if that then the tendency is to write very long letters, and they are also becoming difficult. That's your only chance then. And then the lady writes a 7-page letter, and then the spiritual master looks at that and gets cross-eyed. So that's now it's not easy to digest a 7-page letter with someone's really heartfelt revelations in there, which deserve to be taken seriously, but at the same time one wonders, and how am I going to deal with this? And when am I going to reply to this? I have to take 1 week off to reply to this letter. Things like the letters are too big. You have to take a few days off because you have to think about them, you have to write. It's not just, okay, you know, here's a 7-page letter, let me write a quick reply. You have to actually think what is the proper reply, and there's 20, 30 points in the letter. Too much. So it is difficult what to do. The personal service is there, and on the other hand, especially when spiritual masters are sannyasis, there comes an extra complexity in the whole situation, because sannyasis have this rigid dharma of like not mixing with ladies as little as possible. So when a sannyasi becomes a spiritual master, he has a double role, and these two roles are in a sense conflicting. They're of a different nature. And so sometimes he has to, the guru sometimes has to put the spiritual master hat on and say, okay, as a spiritual master, all right, I will be a little less into the sannyas mode. But he must be careful with that, because if he is too much stretching his boundaries of the sannyas restrictions, he might endanger his own ashram. And he should never he may be above, but he should not think that he is above the influence of Maya. He should never take it like that. So it is complex. therefore, the spiritual master who is a sannyasi will be inclined to accept service from female disciples, personal service, and Prabhupada did. He allowed Malati, he allowed Palika to cook, he allowed Daivi Shakti to look after his quarters, and she was like, basically then, while looking after the quarters means that she's all her presence is there. If someone looks after your room, they're present. Because they put things in a certain way, I mean, there's some flowers there, it's like there's all these unspoken actions which create presence in the room. So if you accept personal servant, someone gets in your consciousness, gets in your room, gets in your consciousness. So Prabhupada allowed that. Sometimes though, he didn't. Sometimes it's better the ladies don't cook, right? And some Navayugendra was cooking then, or something like that, or had the man cooking. But then again, he'd allow the ladies to cook. So Prabhupada sometimes went up and down a little bit, sometimes in the mood of the the guru who engages the ladies, and other times he emphasized his sannyasa side. And maybe he was going up, it was really going up and down in his moods. So it may not be that there is one line. The ladies have to also, they have, being in a female body is anyway an austerity. There is added austerity. Because according to the Vedic culture, women are like fire, men like butter, and that fire butter thing is doesn't create equal roles. Although men and women are equal on the spiritual platform, it doesn't create equal roles because, for example, women have this have more directives to cover their bodies than men, and so on. So this whole chastity thing is an added element. Because the female body is supposedly more potent in bewildering the minds of men than the body of the men. That is because Radharani is more powerful in bewildering the mind of Krishna than Krishna is in bewildering the mind of Radharani. That's where it comes from. Anyway, so these complications are there. Therefore, although the ladies like to render personal service, they have to still keep in mind that it shouldn't go too far, right? That they should also do something to protect the sannyas of their spiritual master. They shouldn't like always be pushing, see how far they can push that opportunity to render some personal service or get some personal association. They sometimes have to also sort of have to realize, well, okay, I should keep a little bit of reservation. That's the Dharma. And the Dharma is not always easy to bear. I sympathize with that, you see. It's like when I have female disciples on a personal level, I'm totally the well-wisher of these female disciples. And it's quite amazing because I try to think at really, at their situation from their perspective, which before I never did in the same way. I never thought of it as much of their perspective as I do now as a spiritual master. So I can appreciate that Dharma is hard to bear, but to some extent it's inevitable. It is inevitable. So there is some little more distance. But that doesn't mean that they get any less mercy. That is really not the case. They get the full mercy as much as any male disciple. They do. They do. So they're not missing out. They're actually not missing out. The spiritual master is equally concerned that his female or male disciples are going back to God. And he is equally investing in that. Although he may act a little different in the external relationship.
To the ladies, if you have such a thing that they are more likely that they can serve the guru together with the rest of the ladies, it would be easier.
Sometimes not. It's like I personally don't like, I know I make it complicated when I don't write 10 simple rules, you know. 10 simple rules that should always be followed. Right? People like to reduce life to that. You know what I'm saying? But life is not like 10 simple rules that should always be followed. Each situation should be judged with intelligence. So I'm sorry, I can't reduce it like that.
Hellish intelligence.
Narakabuddhi.
Narakabuddhi. One of them is to view the spiritual master as an ordinary person. So the question is, this is a very strong statement. How
describing is what it means. It means to switch the master.
Ayrıca dışmışıyla diğer kuyusunlarla bir savaylar ve sonra. So, seeing the deity or supreme lord or a spiritual master as an ordinary person, that is a hellish mentality, Padma Purana. What does it mean? It means that this mentality will ultimately drive us to its hell, to its suffering. It will pull us down. It will pull us down. Yeah. The result of it. I mean, it may not be that one is immediately suffering so much, but ultimately one is then on the road to hell. That's what it means. So it's hell. It's another way of saying it. And maybe a long road, but one is on that. And, because the spiritual master is not an ordinary person, and we must practice that. This is not easy, because in the mind, we do tend to sort of minimize. And that's why there's all that external pomp, like huge seats. I mean, look at this seat, it's almost like a car, I want a gear stick here on the right. Maybe you can drive also. That would be really good. But so big seeds and all these paraphernalia to sort of remind us, don't take the spiritual master as an ordinary person. That is the distillery. So it's this constant practice. At this stage, we can only do it in practice. All of our devotional service is only in practice. Therefore, such an instruction to not see a spiritual master as an ordinary person, we cannot fulfill. We can only do it in practice, because that is our stage. We are only practicing devotional service. We can only practice that, and that means remind ourselves again and again, don't see us as an ordinary person now. Remember. That's what we have to say to ourselves. If you were thinking about examples, why don't you give
them? I was thinking, if you argue,
But sometimes, one might even argue, but then there's even a way to argue. Now, Krishna Vajinamrita, which is a book of, which I referred to yesterday, which gives a lot of etiquette about guru-disciple interaction, is describing that one might, if one has arguments to present based on scripture and logic, based on scripture, one might present them in a submissive mood. But if the spiritual master rejects them, then one should not challenge. Then one should simply accept. But one might sometimes present. But if one does this every time, it becomes too much. And really, it's better if we could just, I accept. That's also what it means to remain a fool before the spiritual master. That we say, I accept whatever he says. Thinking of the spiritual master as an ordinary person, think that he has opinions. Think that reading, projecting feelings upon him, projecting the normal human feelings that exist of liking and disliking, and therefore to think, yes, he doesn't like me, and therefore he's not treating me nicely now. Or, in other words, to minimize him and to think for a moment that he is not acting as a representative of Krishna, that he is not living in this perspective of like Krishna's instructions and Krishna's mission. That is a mistake. The spiritual master is, whatever he's doing that within the perspective of Krishna's instructions. instructions in Krishna's mission. So if we see him outside of that perspective, that's what. We're going on really long now. So we even I'm getting signals now from stream. And he's the boss. And well, that's the big boss, but you are in charge of the temple. The boss has put you in charge. Anyway, thank you very much. Shri Prabhupada.